Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, I feel like talking about the brain a little bit today.
Okay.
Yeah?
That was a high fastball that I wasn't expecting.
You know?
Whiffed it, too.
Today is brain day.
Spring training in Florida, so.
But the way that we're going to talk about the brain today is maybe a little bit different than what we talked about before. We're not going to talk about particular structures or anything like that. Right. What we're going to talk about instead is some conversations we've had after we read this article from the Wall Street Journal.
Right, right.
We read a recent article from the Wall Street Journal entitled "My Mind Made Me Do It," and it's the author's review of a book called "The Brain Defense."
Right. Yeah. It's funny that they said, "I would have liked my brain made me do it."
Right.
And my mind, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but
yeah, because there is a difference between mind and brain.
That's right.
And that is another podcast completely.
Podcast. Right.
But there is definitely a difference between mind and brain.
Right, right. But it's still worth a read. Mm-hmm. If you can get your hands on this one, "My Mind Made Me Do It," a recent article.
Yeah.
I love the beginning of this.
Yeah.
Because it gives that wonderful history of
right.
where this whole defense comes from.
Right. And so I'll put a link in the show notes, but it's what you're referring to is, of course, this the history of the brain defense in like legal cases and things like that, where people say, you know, well, the person couldn't help their behaviors because their brain functions in a particular way that led to them making certain decisions and engaging in certain behaviors, and they couldn't help it.
And it's really a strange multifaceted defense. You could talk for a long time about the brain defense.
You absolutely could.
What does it go back? What is that case? Herbert Weinstein?
Herbert Weinstein from the early 90s.
And that's when it was. It was fairly recent.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's still going. I mean, in 2010, there was the Graham versus the state of Florida case that went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, where it was indicated that, you know, adolescents can't be sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole because their brain isn't fully developed.
Right.
And so they engage in behaviors that they may not later engage in because their brain isn't fully developed. And then there was another one, Miller. I can't remember what state that one was from, but that one sort of added on to Graham because Graham didn't include some capital crimes.
Right.
But Miller then includes capital crime all the way up to murder.
So what this all means is that this is an evolving profession or whatever you want to call it, but it's very much an organic development, and we're sort of feeling our way through this, the biology of it and the legal aspects of it, because it's a prickly question.
Absolutely.
When you're trying to determine competence or responsibility, you know, what happens when a teenager commits a crime? Is it different than an adult?
Right.
You know? And it's not an easy question, and it's still being settled in the courts.
Absolutely, yeah. And so, but we're not going to necessarily talk about it from that perspective. The conversation that we had, we thought was interesting enough to bring to the podcast, is the fact that we often use the brain defense for everyday things.
To rationalize other things.
Yeah,
right. That's right.
You know, oh, he can't help it because he has ADHD. Mm-hmm. You know. I act like this because I have Asperger's.
Right.
You know, I can't do this because I have this. And, you know, oh, I'm moody because I have bipolar disorder. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of... The first thing is that a lot of times those kinds of statements are made by people who don't even really have a diagnosis, first of all. They just say, oh, well, you know, I have ADHD. Well, when were you diagnosed? Oh, well, I've never been diagnosed. It's just...
Or my favorite, oh, I'm OCD.
Right,
you know, so
right.
It's because I'm OCD. You don't meet criteria for OCD.
Right.
You don't have a formal diagnosis.
Right. Mm. But for some reason, we find comfort in being able to label our behaviors, especially our unwanted behaviors, as a disorder that is sort of theoretically outside of our immediate control.
Outside that, therein lies the rub.
Right.
I can't help being this way. Mm.
Right. It's sort of like saying, well, I can't help that I can't see that far. I need glasses.
Right.
And so it's like, oh, well, you know, we accommodate for that. And we say, oh, well, we won't hold you accountable for being able to see that far because you need glasses.
But we will hold you accountable for wearing your glasses when you're driving.
Right. Exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
Right. So we're using that same rationale, though, right. with our brain and saying, well, I can't help that behavior because I have this brain condition.
Right.
And it's not... I don't think that is a real viable defense in those kinds of situations.
No,
you know, if you're capable, when it comes to authentic conditions,
mm-hmm.
you know, most people who really have OCD, for example, many of those people are seeking treatment
right.
and they want to change. And so they're actively engaging in right. some kind of process to mm-hmm. to hopefully, you know, alter those behaviors
right.
and urges and compulsions and everything.
Mm-hmm.
People who say they have OCD who have never been diagnosed, there's not a distress when it comes to those. Oftentimes, there's not a distress
right.
associated with that. And so
right.
I'm not going to do anything about it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I have. It's like saying, I can't see that far, but I'm not going to get glasses.
No, I'm not going to do anything.
So why would that be okay?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this, we have to be very cautious about using those kinds of things as defenses because they really just don't hold.
I find myself saying, well, it's an explanation, but it's not an explanation. It's an explanation for why...
It's an explanation, but it's not an excuse.
Maybe that's a better... I don't know. That may be a better way of putting it.
Yeah.
That it doesn't absolve you of responsibility.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that... Here's the dilemma we get into. When we say things, psychologists, we say things like, you have ADHD. That is why you do some of the
right.
things that you do.
Right.
Okay. However, you still have the responsibility to do something about it.
Right.
Where what we don't want to have happen is for parents or teachers to say, oh, well, see, that's what we're saying. He should be punished for what he's doing.
Right.
No, that's where the difference is.
Right.
You don't, first of all, you shouldn't punish anybody.
Right.
For most things. But the problem is that the disorder still is an explanation of why
right.
you're acting the way you are. Not an
right.
excuse, but it's an explanation. But we don't want to make punishment okay. Mm-hmm. Because
right.
you have that condition.
Yeah, I think that like when I have to testify in court, one of the ways that I present it is, you know, this helps provide an explanation for why for something that contributed to the presentation of those behaviors.
Right. Right.
It's not the presentation in its entirety
mm-hmm.
because
right.
there's still some volition. There's still some. You
right.
know, in a previous podcast, I think, that we did earlier this week, we talked about, you know, when opportunity meets temptation.
Yeah, right.
Well,
mm-hmm.
you still have to put yourself in that situation.
Exactly.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and so, yes, you may have not been able to inhibit those impulses at that
mm-hmm.
time, but you still put yourself in that situation where those
right.
impulses and temptations were there.
Right. That's right. And so let's go back to ADHD. It's an easier one. It's easy enough to talk about because we're familiar with it. You have the child with ADHD who has a tendency to have poor impulse control, to be motorically hyperactive,
mm-hmm.
To be inattentive, to be disorganized. So you have all those tendencies. But you also have the obligation to use medication,
right.
to use a tighter schedule, to use behavior management. So there are best practices that
right.
you are obligated to use
right.
To ameliorate the effects
right.
of the disorder. I mean,
yeah.
But it is a disorder,
mm-hmm.
and we shouldn't... I mean, there are too many people being punished for doing things that they really can't help
right.
themselves for doing.
Right.
But it doesn't absolve them of the responsibility to manage... to manage wisely and in a mindful way what they're struggling with.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to get a little political here.
Oh.
But you know what this reminds me of is a few years ago here in Florida, there was a huge controversy about whether or not pediatricians should be allowed
yeah.
to ask families if there are guns in the
yeah.
house.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, guns right advocates were, you know, arguing that that is an invasion of privacy, mm-hmm. that they should not be allowed to ask those kinds of questions, that, you know, it's ways in which the government can mm-hmm. keep track and et cetera, et cetera. Well, the reason that I think that many of us in the healthcare profession were concerned about that movement, because mm-hmm. I think that it's important that we know some of those things, is because of exactly what we're talking about. You know, if you have a kid with ADHD, there are certain things that you would like to have in place if there are those kinds of temptations and right. risky things mm-hmm. in the environment.
Right.
Not that anybody is wanting to take anybody's guns away or anything like that, but if you have a person who is highly impulsive, but they live in a home where the family believes that, you know what, we understand guns, we know how they work, we, you know, mm-hmm. we engage in safe right. gun habits, but not don't really take into account that tendency towards impulsivity.
Right.
We're finding ourselves in a very troubling scenario, and so it's sort of only peripherally related to what we're talking about, but it is mm-hmm. the idea that while we understand how the brain is influenced or kind of sets the stage for some of these behaviors, it doesn't negate the obligation mm-hmm. to set up our environment, to provide treatment or identify right. ways to limit those risks right. and those problems.
I can't. I'm smiling as you're talking mm-hmm. because I'm. You know, should we ask if they have fishing poles in the house?
Well,
I mean, why yeah. guns? I mean, I've never understood.
Right.
What is special about a gun?
Right. I mean,
can we ask if there are wooden spoons in the house?
Well, you know, the one of the arguments was that, you know, it because when we ask about those things, or when pediatricians specifically ask about those kinds of things, it goes right along with asking, are there poisons? Are there
yeah.
dangerous cleaning? You know, how are you keeping those things contained? And
where are your little pods of Tide?
Right,
you know,
right.
Where do you keep those? Where do you keep your bleach?
Right.
Where do you keep your ropes?
Right.
Where do you keep your leather belts? You know,
right.
I mean, do you cover up your receptacles? Anything mm-hmm. that can harm a child,
right.
you know, are they in a safe place?
We ask those questions because
we shouldn't ask about those plugs in electrical outlets, because that's an invasion of privacy.
Yeah.
You know,
It's hard to understand, but it again goes to the idea that, you know, while it's not a complete excuse to
right.
say that the brain made me do it,
right.
it is in part an explanation that mm-hmm. doesn't alleviate the obligation to do something about
right.
it.
Right. And the take home message here is that we're learning so much. I mean, we really have learned so much about the brain, and that the brain is this magnificent organ that will once in a while
mm-hmm.
lead to these kind of problems. I mean, we have to acknowledge, now that we know all these
right.
things, we have to acknowledge. At the same time, we have to do everything we can to inhibit, to
right.
control,
right.
to organize. So that we live a productive and happy life.
Right,
you know,
right. So the final piece is, of course, you know, when you recognize and identify the limitations that you have, then you're obligated to do something about it. So you don't want to just say, oh, I can't do this or I can't do that, and then leave it with that. It again kind of goes back to the vision
mm-hmm.
example that we use. So, you know, yes, your brain may have contributed to why you did something, but it is not an excuse.
Not an excuse.
It's not a way to get out of the responsibilities for those behaviors.
It doesn't absolve you
right.
of the responsibility to do something about it.
Absolutely.
Right.
So,
okay.
All right. Well, that's it for today. We'll be back next time with another podcast,
mm-hmm.
another set of ideas. So until then.
Go ahead.
I was going to mess with you.
Go ahead.
Until then, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.